From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We've got a split show for you tonight. Later on, strange mysteries worldwide. Get ready for that. Well, here's what's happening. Well, if you were listening to radio or watching television and that emergency broadcast system alert came in, it was kind of confusing. The first national test of a U.S. national alert system left many Americans confused, and some said the system failed in its goal to reach all broadcasters in the country. Many people watching television, for example, heard the familiar scratchy noises followed by the test announcement designed to alert you of national emergencies, but others apparently did not hear anything. In the western state of Oregon, a television station said it was among several stations in the area that simply missed the test. Some viewers in New York said they saw no message at the prescribed time. In the capital city of Washington, D.C., viewers watching CNN saw the 30-second test and then were switched to a shopping channel for several seconds before returning to the all-news station. The test is part of the emergency alert system designed to transmit via television and radio emergency alerts, warnings regarding weather threats, child abductions, and other types of emergencies. But now, for the very first time, the government would have the ability to step in and tell you what is going on. An earthquake struck eastern Turkey on Wednesday night, killing at least seven people, leaving dozens trapped in the rubble of toppled buildings damaged in a previous quake, which killed 600 people. A storm of historic intensity continues to pound the western coast of Alaska, twice the size of Texas. This thing is a monster. The storm is as deep as a Category 3 hurricane, and the National Weather Service is calling it a life-threatening epic storm due to its dangerous combination of, listen to this, 40-foot waves, winds over 100 miles an hour, storm surges, flooding, and blinding snow. How far can police go in tracking your movements without a warrant? That's the key issue as the Supreme Court weighs a case involving the use of GPS monitoring on a suspect's car. A Justice Department lawyer is arguing that GPS tracking is highly effective during early investigations, and sticking a GPS tracker on a car is one of a number of tools police use without a warrant. Lauren Weinstein with us. He, of course, is an expert in privacy and the internet. What do you think of this one? Putting GPS devices without a warrant on a car, Lauren?
Yeah, it does seem kind of problematic because there's that thing called the Fourth Amendment, which applies to the issues of search and seizure, and that's really what the case revolves around. Now, what's interesting about this is that this has been going on for years now, really basically since GPS was developed and got small enough to put in little devices you could magnetically mount to the bottoms of cars and such. And law enforcement's view going back these years is that that's not really a search. They say that because you could be observed out in public, I mean, in theory, they could have somebody following everybody, right?
That's right.
You know, like Columbo following, the little guy following you everywhere you go. So they say this is really no different. Now, the Supreme Court, when this hit the court a few days ago, seems to be kind of skeptical about this. A couple of things came up. One is one of the justices asked the government, well, could you do this to us? Could you put GPS units on our cars without a warrant? Said, yeah, sure. Of course. That didn't go over all that well. Now, Scalia, who is a very, you know, the most conservative, arguably, person on the court, he doesn't seem to have too much difficulty with the concept of the devices being used, per se. He says that's really a decision that should be up to Congress, how far that should go. But he seemed to clearly feel that the act of putting the device on a car, actually installing it there mm-hmm. without the permission of the car's owner, clearly constituted a search and would be wrong on that basis.
Interesting.
So my suspicion is that, you know, there's no way to know what the court's going to do, but my guess would be that they're probably going to clamp down on this a certain amount, probably not as far as some people would like, but it's starting to look like they're taking the view that the government's attitude that doing this willy-nilly with no warrants under all conditions is going too far. So it'll be very interesting to see how this turns out.
Okay, thank you very much, Lauren. Well, here we go again. You know, we've had a couple satellites plunging to the planet over the past month or so. Now a Russian spacecraft is on its way to Mars, they say, with 12 tons of toxic fuel stuck circling, though, around the wrong planet. It was supposed to go to Mars. It's stuck around another planet, us, Earth. It could come crashing back to the planet in a couple of weeks if engineers can't coax it back on track. Some experts are hopeful that the space probe's silent engines can be fired to send it off to Mars. If not, it will plummet to the planet Earth. But most U.S. space debris experts think the fuel on board would explode harmlessly in the upper atmosphere and never reach the ground. The launch mishap was the latest in a series of recent Russian failures that have now raised concerns about their own space program. Well, now here's something that's confusing. Cutting back on salt may not be as beneficial for your heart as once thought, according to a new study. While a diet low in salt reduces blood pressure, it increases the levels of cholesterol, fat, and hormones in the blood that are known to increase the risk of heart disease. Christian Wild, author, researcher, and expert. What do we do? I'm confused.
Yeah, we are confused. George, when these new studies come out, you really don't know what to believe. I'll give you an example. Today's study flies directly in the face of the very respected DASH study. Now, DASH stood for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension.
Uh-huh.
And that study dealt with the very same identical subject as today's study, cholesterol and sodium, but arrived with the absolutely opposite conclusion. The researchers found that sodium level had no impact upon their total cholesterol, LDL, bad cholesterol, good cholesterol, total cholesterol. It didn't make any difference. They concluded people can reduce the sodium in their diet without worrying whether it'll harm them through raising cholesterol. And then I bet you anything somebody's going to come along this time of year with a study that tries to convince us there's no Santa Claus.
Well, as long as they don't tell us not to take turmeric.
Right, you got that. And we know the body works best, George, when it's in homeostasis, which is body in balance.
That's right.
So we don't want to take too much of any one thing without paying a price for it. Example, we can't take too much magnesium and ignore the calcium levels. Heart patients on diuretics cannot deplete too much sodium without paying attention to the balance of potassium. Now, my dear mother used to always tell me, the key to life, son, everything in moderation.
You got that right. Hey, by the way, as we get closer to Christmas, You wouldn't happen to have a song on a CD that you might want us to play?
Well, I'm going to go and give the Nuriites a very special song for Christmas.
All right, you do that. Get it to me for Friday the 23rd before that, okay?
Okay.
You got
Take
that.
A look at the site, folks, because I've got a surprise for you. George, you're going to be surprised, too. We'll talk about it when we're together.
MyHeartBook.com.
You got it.
All right, thanks, Christian Wild. Not putting the clocks back could help in the fight against child obesity, according to another study. According to the research, children are more influenced by daylight than the weather when deciding whether or not to play outside. U.S. researchers report that not changing the clocks would give more opportunities for active play. In a story we've been following for a couple days here, the White House simply saying, look, based on everything we know, there is no ET presence outside of our planet, and we do not know of any ET presence on our planet, responding to a petition drive set up by Stephen Bassett from his group. Richard Dolan, who's an expert on White House disclosure and government, he's with us. His book, AD After Disclosure, we're going to talk with Richard for a couple hours about this story and what he thinks is going on. We're back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Richard Dolan has spoken at conferences around the world discussing the destruction of our political liberties as a result of the UFO cover-up. He has also speculated on the possible nature of the non-humans themselves and what their presence here means for all of us. This has led him to take a new approach to the topic of exopolitics and to develop some insights into the practical challenges and opportunities for a full disclosure of the UFO phenomenon. Richard's with us for a couple hours tonight on Coast to Coast as we talk about the White House responding to two petitions that asked the government to acknowledge formally that aliens have visited Earth and to disclose what they might know. Richard, this is not surprising, their response, is it?
No, obviously, George. The White House really had no choice, realistically, other than to say what they did. What was surprising to me was how they said it. Let me just say how unprofessionally, how sophomorically they responded to this petition. And by that, I simply mean, look, Stephen Bassett, who organized these two petitions, got over 17,000 signatures by citizens, simply asking the White House to acknowledge the reality of an extraterrestrial presence and the UFO reality. Something that anyone with common sense who's looked into this sees an overwhelming amount of evidence for this, which we can go into in a little while. Now, the White House, of course, is not, they're going to stonewall as much as they're able to. But what was just shocking to me, or at least surprising, was just how silly their response was. I mean, they send this low-level functionary at the Office of Science and Technology Policy, a fellow named Phil Larson. I don't mean to knock this man, but he's a low-level guy down there. And he writes this grammatically dubious memo for the press, which is just so casually put together. At least back in the old days of Project Blue Book, when the Air Force would lie to the public, they at least used proper grammar and sort of a bureaucratese about the whole thing, had its own sort of, totalitarian dignity about it, I guess you could say. This is just, really kind of silly. And all they say is the U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet, or that there's an ET presence that's contacted us, et cetera. And then they say there's no credible evidence to suggest that anything's being hidden from the public.
Meanwhile, Richard, under the Freedom of Information Act, they'll send you documents with half of them all blacked out. So what do you think about that?
Well, see, that's exactly it, George. What's interesting is that this is the first time that the White House has actually made a formal public policy position on UFOs. They usually have let the Air Force do it all these years. There have been times in the past when the White House has sort of been pushed a little bit to the UFO issue back in the Jimmy Carter years. During Carter's first year in the White House, there was a bit of a White House initiative on this, only because they'd gotten so many letters asking for Jimmy Carter to disclose the reality then. But there's never been a formal statement. This is the first time, this statement. And so what makes it interesting is that it's just so poorly done.
Right.
They're just opening themselves up for, in other words, the White House has just stepped into it, and I don't even know if they realize it. They're not going to be getting out of this one for a little while. To say that there's no evidence, really, for the UFO phenomenon in any way, just flies in the face of hundreds and really thousands of pages of documents that the U.S. government itself is responsible for that shows something absolutely bizarre, something absolutely that, you know, needs to get attention is going on, and they just deny it. And in fact, some of the U.S. Air Force studies that have been sponsored all the way back through the years through Project Blue Book, famously one called Blue Book Special Report Number 14, that was done back in the early 50s. Anyone who reads that very detailed, technical, sophisticated report, it's very clear that there's a UFO reality, all right. But what they've done all these years, going back to the 50s and all the way up to today, is they, you know, the conclusions will never, ever match the evidence. And they do this every single time. That's true for Blue Book 14 back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. But you had any independent analyst looking at the evidence would say, wow, this is actually really strong evidence for the reality of UFOs. But the conclusion that the government bodies have always said is that, well, there's no evidence for any of this being legitimate.
I would have loved, Richard, had they sent this report of denial to Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who, as you know, strongly believes that we've been visited, has been told we've been visited, right. Yet we get this kind of cockamamie report from the White House.
Well, it's exactly right. And for those of us, and I realize most of the many people listening to Coast to Coast to every night, they're with it. They know they get it. But of course, the White House has to play a different game. For them to provide any kind of credence to the reality of this phenomenon is going to open up floodgates that they are just not going to be prepared to deal with. And we've seen this happen many, many times over the history of this phenomenon, that every time it kind of bumps up into the authorities in a way that forces a response, they have to slam it down, because if they open that door any further, it really is a situation that can threaten to get out of control. And this is really exactly the theme that my co-author Bryce Zabel and I focused on in our book AD After Disclosure, which is simply an attempt to look at all of the implications, societal implications, of a true disclosure of the UFO reality. And to do that, as we discovered in preparing that book, holy smokes, it would rock our world in every conceivable way. There would be a blowback to all of the institutions, all the government institutions that have denied this all these years. People, not everyone would take it particularly well. And so they have to. They really have no choice. The problem, though, is they could have done this in a better way. And had there been any truth to the rumors that the Obama administration was going to disclose, and these are rumors that I have never believed, I have never thought there was any credence, but one has heard this for years. If there had been any truth to that, I think we would have seen a different response in this reply that we've just received.
Well, Richard, and as we've talked about over the years on this program and in person when we meet at conferences, to me, there's no question. I'm not sure the presidents, most presidents that have been in office, even know about the UFO presence. I don't think they're told anything.
Right. I go back. Well, I've spoken to a number of individuals who I think are in a very good position to have known one way or the other, and I get a mixed bag. The impression that I've received is that some of the presidents back in the 70s and 80s, I think of
Nixon knew.
Nixon, yes. Richard Nixon, I think, absolutely knew an awful lot about this. Of course, he was a vice president to Dwight Eisenhower. Nixon was very, very well plugged in. The famous story of him with his good friend Jackie Gleason. This is a story that I personally believe, in which he took Gleason to see
down in Homestead.
Homestead Air Force Base, right, in Florida. Jimmy Carter, there's a story that I got directly from a man who is on a first-name basis with multiple former directors of Central Intelligence. I had a very, very long conversation, interview with this man, and he told me directly of a story of Jimmy Carter being briefed on this topic in June of 1977, and it's not known to this man what was said in the meeting, but he did tell me that at the end of the briefing, Jimmy Carter, president, was seen with his elbows on his desk, his head in his hands, and he was sobbing.
Sobbing?
Right.
Why would he be sobbing?
Good question.
What would be so bad for him to sob? Unless he was emotional, that's possible.
Well, I think a couple of...
I mean, I'd get emotional. Richard, if I was told directly, I already believe, but if I was told directly we were being visited, they've been here, the life exists outside our solar system, it would be emotional to me, wouldn't it, for you?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I'm sure many of us have been in that situation. I myself have been in that situation where I had a very intense discussion with another man who was high up in the food chain, as it were, and laid it out for me. And I remember it was a very, I didn't cry, but it was an emotional moment for me. But in the case of Jimmy Carter, yeah, he, according to what this man told me, was sobbing. And the impression that I received is that it was upsetting information.
Indeed. Richard, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back, talk more about this incredible story of the White House saying there's no sign of an ET or UFO cover-up. In the next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Richard Dolan as we talk about AD after disclosure. I'm George Norrie, and we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Would you like to become a Coast Insider, part of the Coast Insiders Club, for less than 25 cents a day? In some cases, 15 cents a day? And get podcasting downloads and just have some fun? Well, simply go to coasttocoastam.com. Our goal, 2,000 new club members every month. We did 2,500 in October, and we're well on our way to getting another 2,000 in November. So jump on board. Go to coasttocoastam.com. Click Coast Insider at the top of the homepage. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. You've got a split show for you tonight. We've got Richard Dolan for a couple hours as we talk about the government saying no sign of ETs or UFO cover-ups based on a petition drive that was put on the White House website. It's obvious that the things that the Air Force has denied and now government and in the White House, there's a plan in underfoot, Richard, not to tell us anything. Why do you think that is?
Because for them to it would be like how do you undo a lie that has gone now for an entire lifetime? There's really no easy way to do it, because the longer that lie has gone on in our history, the deeper its own forward momentum has gone, the greater its own infrastructure has become. And I just think that they're in a position now where those people who have possession of this secret have no viable way to release that secret at all to the world. All of these rumors, so-called rumors, that said that the Obama administration is going to disclose it, I've never believed them. I don't think that they have any credibility at all. And indeed, Barack Obama has never indicated publicly any hint that he's got the slightest intention of moving forward on this issue. And I think this petition really just underscores that. I mean, had they had any interest whatsoever, they could have worded it. They didn't have to say that, yes, UFOs are real, ETs are here, people, but they could have said this is a valid phenomenon that does deserve more attention than it's received. They could have done something, but they can't open that barn door at all, because if they do, I mean, think about it. You have millions of people around the world, billions, who will say, what? So what about all of these UFO reports all these years? Some of these had to have been true. Are aliens abducting us? That's a question that'll come right out. What about all of the rumors that you've recovered secret technology at Roswell and elsewhere? What have you been doing with all of that secret technology, and what new ideas have you been dealing with? And who are these other beings? Do we have anything to worry about? Is there a replacement to petroleum? It'll take all of 10 minutes for some of these implications to sink in worldwide.
Give us cheap energy.
The world upside down.
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. So what do you think of Bassett's push to get this disclosure petition going? He doesn't give up, does he?
No, my God. In my whole life, I've never met anyone like Steve Bassett. I've known that man for over 10 years, and he's like a brother, and in all the good and bad ways that is, because you love your brother, and sometimes you want to kill your brother. But I've known Stephen for so long, and I've just admire his determination on this issue. Honestly,
what a passion!
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, one of the most amazing public speakers on the topic of UFOs that anyone is lucky enough to hear him. He's extraordinary. But I support what he's trying to do here. I don't think any of us had illusions that the White House was going to just roll over for Steve and say, oh, yeah, sure, Steve, it's all real. By the way, we've been covering it up for you people. Some criminal actions have been taking place, and while we've been at it, sure, Steve. No, that was never going to happen. But so you could say, well, why set yourself up for failure over and over? But I think this is not a failure, because what he's doing, everyone's got their part to play in this drama that is unfolding. And what he is doing is he's keeping this issue at the forefront of the political front. As far as UFO activism is concerned. And
He was delighted that they came out with a statement on his petition.
I don't think he was delighted about the statement itself.
No, not about the statement, but the fact that they did come out with something. He was happy about that.
Yeah, well, you've always got to have a positive spin on something that happens. The fact that they replied is a good thing. Sure it is, because what it did is it honestly, to anyone with a brain in their head, the White House came out looking really silly. I think you don't have to be a UFO believer, but to just see how the whole thing was crafted,
they got trapped. I don't think they expected that to pop up as a petition, and they didn't expect those kind of signatures. I remember when Steve came on the show, Richard, and he talked about it, and he said, "Folks, go there and sign it." And he was already close to the number he needed, and this audience helped push him way over the top. I think those people who put this petition planned together for the government probably went, "Oh my gosh, now what do we do?"
Well, what they do now is they've raised the threshold for responses. It's up to 25,000 signatories for the new petitions, and he's organizing a new one. He's getting right back on it, and he's going to get a new petition, and I guarantee you he's going to succeed because he's Steve Bassett. He knows he is a bulldog, and he won't give up. The thing is, there's never going to be a voluntary disclosure by the U.S. government.
No,
never,
and
never,
I've
never,
said
never.
That.
They will have to be pushed to the wall. But the fact is, that day will come, I feel, when they are pushed to the wall and they will have to disclose some level of truth about this topic. And that's when it's going to get interesting, and it's also going to get very messy. Because they'll never – look, they've been lying to us, not just on UFOs. They lie about everything. Everyone knows. Governments lie about everything. And so when the day comes that they are forced to give some kind of truth on UFOs, they're going to give it with all the spin that they can muster. They're going to hold back everything that they're able to hold back for as long as they can. In other words, the moment of disclosure, that's not the end of anything. That is the beginning of an entirely new phase of the struggle for truth. But we got to realize this. You know, we're talking years and years. Let's have disclosure. We need disclosure. Well, that's just all disclosure will do. And all that means is an acknowledgement that, yes, this stuff is real.
Mm-hmm.
The battle is not going to end. The CIA is not simply going to walk away from the table simply because, now this secret is out. They got a lot of other things that they're going to need to hide, and they're going to continue to control the spin on this. So the only thing that will change is that it will be more acceptable for public citizens to have this out as a policy issue, and it will be very much to our advantage that that's the case. But that doesn't mean that the government is simply going to give us all the data that we want. I mean, even the president, you were just asking before the last break, how much do the presidents really know? And I ended up telling you about Jimmy Carter. I think he did know something. But I think you're right, George, if you're implying that a lot of these presidents really don't know. They can't know. They don't have the time. What does a president do? He's got to shake hands. He's got to meet with the public. He's got to kiss the babies. He's got to get reelected. He's got all these things that he's got to deal with, and to deal with all of the classified programs that are out there. It's not possible. It's physically not possible if I'm in control. And something as explosive as UFOs, look, they got to keep that at arm's length. So for President Obama to embrace this topic would be, in his situation now, trying to fight for reelection, that's political suicide.
Absolutely.
There's not a chance that he's going to touch this topic. If he has the guts to do it, he might do it after he gets reelected. But that's a big if. That's an if.
Tell me, Richard, in your research and your work with Bryce Zabel, and you're updating your book AD, aren't you?
Yes, we are. We absolutely have, completed a really exciting revision and updating of AD After Disclosure, which is going to be released by a larger publisher, Career Press.
Oh, good.
Which they're going to come out with that book in the springtime of 2012, And our current version of AD After Disclosure is a book that we both love. It was an adventure to write. For republication, to get a larger distribution, we've gone with another company, and we've done some updates to it, I'm happy to say, and the book reads just beautifully. I love it even more now than I did when we put it together originally.
What's the premise?
Well, the premise is the same as it had been a year ago when mm-hmm. we came out with it, which is fundamentally, how will our world change when, not if, but when the truth is forced out on UFOs? And really what we try to do is explore this. And a lot of the book is providing a contemporary analysis and some historical analysis of the phenomenon to try to set the groundwork here. But the bulk of the book, the really exciting part of the book, is our attempt to look ahead. That's always difficult. That's always going to involve a certain amount of speculation, obviously. But we've always tried to keep our feet on the ground while doing so. So that, in other words, treating the topic like a think tank would and asking ourselves, what are the likely effects on society in terms of politics, U.S. national politics, global politics,
religion,
culture, cultural repercussions, science, religion, all of the economics, the financial markets, energy.
What did you conclude about religion, Richard? I'm curious.
Well, we have a world that's got a lot of different religions, of course. It's not just all Christianity. It's not all evangelical Christianity. There are many, many religious beliefs in the world, and they don't all look at the topic of extraterrestrial life in the same way. So you're going to have, it'll be a varied reaction for sure in terms of just religious response. For example, Islam, next to Christianity, Islam has 1.5 billion adherents, roughly speaking. That's a lot of people. One thing about Islam is that it is not against the creed of Islam to believe in extraterrestrial life. It is in the Quran, in fact, that Allah has created many worlds. And that if he chooses, he can bring those other worlds to us if that is his desire. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to believe in ET if you are Muslim, but it is not against the creed. It's very interesting. And, of course, in that culture also, there's a widespread folklore belief based in the Quran of the jinn, which we would call genie. These mm-hmm. are kind of spirits similar to devils in Christianity. So I think that they're open to it. In the Christian, and here in the United States, in terms of religion, I think what we would have is a grand divide between, on the one hand, let's say you find a lot of, let's say, New Age-type belief systems out there that would very openly embrace the reality of these other beings. You get this in the UFO culture all the time as it is. People who've claimed to have channeled ETs, for example, or have had some kind of connection with positive, benign entities.
Sure.
That's on the one hand. On the other hand, you have evangelical Christianity, which for the most part, and everyone, there's always variations here within each group, but for the most part would look at this ET phenomenon as demonic, as something to be opposed. I've spoken to many, many evangelicals about this in a lot of detail. I think that's a fair statement. So that there's really not a whole lot of middle ground. So what you would see, George, is a vast cultural divide, and I think this will go across the world. And honestly, I don't think there's any easy way to resolve that other than through time and through subsequent generations. New people growing up with this reality are going to respond to this in ways that their parents probably could not have imagined. I think it's going to be messy. In other words, you'll have cultural wars that are going to be heightened as a result of disclosure,
sure.
And that's, a lot of that will have a religious basis.
Will you have a battle between those who believe and those who don't? Will the tensions
right.
just get so much?
Well, those who don't, in other words, those who believe that this disclosure is yet another lie, is that what you mean?
No, in terms of, let's assume that there is disclosure, But right. There's still going to be a camp out there that won't believe it. Will things get tense between them and those who do believe in it?
Who believe in the disclosure?
Yeah. Will there be? Yeah, will they shoot each other or attack?
I guess it depends on how large the camp is of those who don't believe in it. After a certain amount of time goes by, my suspicion is that camp would get smaller and smaller. I mean, right now you hear a lot in certain areas of our research community of the false flag of disclosure. That is, that disclosure itself would be a lie by the government to scare the public into a kind of global police state.
Mm-hmm. Begging us.
Believe in aliens.
Yeah.
In fact, this is an issue that we've expanded on in the new edition of AD. We wrote a longer piece on that whole concept. You could call it the Blue Beam scenario.
Blue Beam. That's right.
Project Blue Beam, which a lot of people have heard of. My feeling about that is, A, I've never been persuaded by the existence of Project Blue Beam. I've never found good evidence for it. That's my own assessment of the matter. That doesn't mean that they're not going to try to lie about elements of disclosure. But yeah, there'll be people who, I'm sure, they'll say, look, aliens are impossible. That's nonsense. There's got to be another explanation here. Of course there will be. The question is how many of them are going to do that and how long. Here's one thing. If you're the president and you are forced to disclose, let's say a major sighting occurs that you cannot deny, or a WikiLeaks type of release that really is credible and embarrassing and forces a statement, something like this that forces it out. See, disclosure will only happen for that reason, and so I believe, therefore, that it will make the position of those who don't believe in the disclosure, I think they'll be in a weak position. And I think as years go by, they'll become a smaller and smaller minority and become insignificant. That's my own opinion.
Richard, you know, we talked about Stephen Bassett's drive. What about Richard Dolan's drive? What pushes you on this?
George, I don't know. Every year that goes by, I become more obsessed by this topic, not less obsessed. It grabs me, has grabbed hold of me. And honestly, this, I'm a lifer. This is something that I will never let go of. Either this or variations of this topic are going to drive me for the rest of my life. Because what I've discovered, I mean, I've now been researching UFOs for about 20 years, just about 20, a little under. Before I got into all of this, I thought I was going to live a life in academia, teaching history at colleges. That was my goal. And what happened with the UFO topic is that it ripped that whole reality. Everything that I thought I knew about my world got turned upside down after diving into the UFO field and really immersing myself in it. So there's no going back. It's like in the movie The Matrix. You take the red pill. How do you go back?
You can't.
You can't go back. And I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to go back. So I will explore this issue in all of its ramifications for the rest of my life, I'm sure. And the thing is, there's always something new to learn. It's not like in The Matrix where you just take one red pill and then you're done. And then, oh, here's reality. Now I know what it is. No, it's not that simple. As you know, as anyone in this field knows, you take your first red pill, and that's good for a little while, and then you realize, you know what, there's still something else that's not right here. And then you learn a new big thing, and that's like taking another red pill, and that's good for a little while. And then another year goes by, and you learn something new. And the next thing you know, when you're flying on a plane and some guy next to you says, so what do? You don't know what to say to them. I don't know how to talk to people on the plane half the time when they try to do that because they
wouldn't know how to handle it.
Now, if I get into this with this guy, you know, what do I tell him? Well, I think your entire reality is essentially a big illusion. Sometimes they do get into that, and a lot of times people really are into it. But honestly, it just has made me realize after all of these years now immersed in this topic, it has transformed my own reality in such a dramatic way. I mean, I take it for granted now. My kids take it for granted.
Well, yeah, but you're one of the best at it. Richard, we're going to take phone calls with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.